Enjoying this episode of The Late Show Pod Show? Then head to cohst.app/lateshow or visit the link in the description to fill out our quick 2-minute survey all about getting to know you.
It's The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert.
Welcome. Welcome one and all in here, out there, all around the world to The Late Show. I'm your host, Stephen Colbert, and we, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, it feels good to be back. It feels good to be with all of you again here in the Ed Sullivan Theater, because after the first few months of the strike, Evie refused to keep chanting my name. But now the writer strike is over with a new contract that includes protections against AI, cost of living increases, better pay for streaming. Plus, thanks to the picket lines, my writers got fresh air and sunshine, and they do not care for that. Now they're back safely in their joke holes, doing what they do best, making my prompter word screen full of good and ha-ha. Thank you. Good to have you back. It's been a long time since our last Late Show. We looked at the calendar today and checked my math on this. I believe we have been off the air for 154 indictments. Is that right?
Roughly.
Is that right?
Roughly.
Ballpark it?
Yeah.
Ballpark it? Ballpark it, Alan? It was a crazy summer to be off. It was just packed with events. And obviously, it would be stupid to try to recap everything that happened over the last 5 months. So here we go. Starting with May. At age 74, Prince Charles finally got his first job, and the dress code was insane casual. Even for Bennigan's, that's a lot of flair. Also in May, a bunch of orcas attacked yachts, Martha Stewart did the swimsuit issue, and Russia banned America's late-night hosts, including me, but for some reason they did not ban my friend, Jimmy Fallon. I'm guessing because of Jimmy's popular segment, Slow Jam the Borscht. Then in June, wildfires in Canada sent giant plumes of smoke down the East Coast, turning New York's air into Satan's butthole. As opposed to New York's normal air, actual butthole. On June 8th, I really, really missed having a show, because that was the day Donald Trump was hit with a 37-count indictment for hoarding national secrets. And we saw some unbelievable photos of where he stored them next to a Mar-a-Lago guest toilet. Look at that. He left the launch codes in the splash zone. Can you imagine using that bathroom? We're out of toilet paper! Wait a second, never mind. I'll just make a two-ply out of Syrian troop movements. Thank you. On June 23rd, there was an attempted coup in Russia by Wagner Group founder and Pope Francis's evil twin, Yevgeny Prigozhin. It briefly looked like the coup might succeed, but in the end, Putin and Prigozhin kissed and blew up. Because just 2 months later, and I'm sure totally unrelated, Prigozhin's plane exploded in midair. Imagine sitting in coach and seeing the guy who tried to overthrow Putin walking down the aisle. I'd be jamming on that flight attendant call button. Excuse me, miss, is the diarrhea plane still available? What? When was that? What month was that? That recently, the diarrhea plane? That was... In July, the Earth kept breaking heat records. The actors went on strike, making the picket lines a little hotter. They found cocaine at the White House just in time for a massive blockbuster weekend for Barbie and Oppenheimer. The two movies seem unrelated, but it turns out J. Robert Oppenheimer also had no genitals. It's just a long way. It's a long walk from that setup to that payoff, just blown off at the Trinity site. But now it's sad? There was some smaller news. Aliens are real. A former military intelligence officer testified to Congress that the U.S. government has seen UFOs and has likely been aware of non-human activity since the 1930s, which explains the popular vaudeville duo Laurel and Zorgon. Oh, speaking of aliens, Elon Musk, in July, he rebranded Twitter as X, to which the world replied, why? Then, on August 1st, special counsel Jack Smith indicted the former president yet again. In a case alleging that January 6th was fueled by lies from Trump. That's right, January 6th was brought to you by its two sponsors, Trump's lies and recent divorce. Recent divorce, storm the Capitol, that'll show Brenda. Then Elon Musk and Mark Zuckerberg almost had an MMA fight, COVID made a comeback, and we got another round of Trump indictments, this time in Georgia for election interference. On August 24th, Trump was arrested at the Fulton County Jail, and for the very first time, we got a mugshot. Yes. That is one anger-glazed ham. Now, I tried to match that face. I tried to make my face match that face for a joke, but I could never get it quite as close as my head writer, Ariel Dumas. Really good. Spooky.
For the win.
Beautiful girl. Of course, Trump never passes up a chance to grift a buck, so he immediately began selling T-shirts, posters, coffee mugs, and even a beer koozie with the mugshot and the slogan, Never Surrender. Quick reminder, that mugshot was taken the day Trump surrendered. So, it's a bit of a mixed message. Reminds me of the time Nancy Reagan sold Just Say No T-shirts with a picture of her doing a line of coke off of Gorbachev's forehead. Now, did that happen? That happened, right? Now, this case is the one where Trump and his co-conspirators were charged with trying to steal the election in Georgia under an area of law called the Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organizations Act, or RICO, which brings me to my new legal segment.
RICO. Guilty.
And that's all the time we have for that segment. Let's keep moving. Gotta keep going. Now, there's nothing in the rule book that says a convict can't be president. So, and this is true, if he wins, he might be able to veto bills from cell block A. Sure, you're asking, how would he even get the veto pen in there? Well, let's just say on visitation days, Eric will be walking funny. Mm-hmm. Dad! I should have used a ballpoint. Then, in mid-September, Mexico's Congress also had a hearing on UFOs and unveiled what they said were alien bodies. Here they are. There you go. That is so sad. Someone forgot to water E.T. That, I know, it is sad. It's sad. That same day, we learned that Lauren Boebert got kicked out of a touring production of Beetlejuice after officials reported she was causing a disturbance, which turns out was code for yanking her date's crank at a family-friendly show. According to witnesses, she was apparently trying to start him like a lawnmower. The choke. That was the choke. Pulling the choke out. You gotta get the choke out before you. Before you put one foot up. Get one foot up. Get a handful. Tell the choke out. And then the choke back in. Or you'll. If you don't put the choke back in, you'll flood him. Speaking of getting caught with your hand in, let's say, the cookie jar, New Jersey Senator and business basketball Bob Menendez. Recently, Senator Menendez and his wife were indicted on federal corruption charges for allegedly taking bribes in exchange for assisting the government of Egypt. Prosecutors are describing the Egyptian bribes as a pyramid scheme.
We're back, baby! We're back!
Please. When the FBI raided his house, they found more than $500,000 in cash stuffed into envelopes and hidden in closets, a safe, and even stuffed in the pocket of a jacket they found in his home. That's always a nice feeling when you slip your hand into the pocket of a coat.
Yeah.
You haven't worn in a while and you find $500,000 in bribes.
Ooh,
and a Jolly Rancher. We got a great show for you tonight.
More Late Show Poncho after this.
Here's the thing about eating. We all have to do it, sometimes even a few times a day. But if you already have a lot on your plate that isn't food, like stuff to do, figuring out your meals can be stressful. By the time you get breakfast going, it could be lunchtime. And then what? Eat your breakfast for lunch? Is that allowed? Yes, you're a grown-up who can make their own choices. And whether that choice is eating breakfast for every meal or bending to society's construct of proper mealtimes, you can eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious ready-to-eat meals that can be ready in as little as 2 minutes. Tailored to your schedule and weird eating habits, you have the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your cool new breakfast-only lifestyle. You can even try meals that feature premium ingredients like filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini, and asparagus, if that's what you're into for breakfast. Or any meal. You do you. Head to factormeals.com/lateshow50 and use code lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code lateshow50 at factormeals.com/lateshow50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
Welcome back, everybody. Normally, when we're doing the show, in the second act, I'd be sitting over there talking about something, but we've been off for so long that I've got more monologue tonight. I'm back here with another. And the first part of the monologue before the break, we were recapping everything from the past 5 months, and now we've made it up to today. And it was a big day, because right here in New York City, a world leader came to town, Taylor Swift, who was last night's Jets game to watch her new beau, Travis the Football Kelce, superstar tight end for the red team. I'm big on the Reds this year. I think the Reds are going to do a lot. At the game, Taylor drank some drinks, hung out with Blake Lively, while injured Jets quarterback Aaron Rodgers sat alone in the sadness box. I'm sorry. By the way, that's how it normally looks when you're watching the Jets. This is all great publicity for the NFL. Mere rumors that Tay-Tay might be at last night's game sent ticket prices surging more than 40%. Used to be you couldn't afford to watch Taylor Swift. Now you can't afford to watch Taylor Swift watch something. But, ladies and gentlemen, the Swift lift is not limited to tickets. Her maybe boyfriend's jersey saw a 400% spike in sales, and the brand of denim shorts she wore to last night's game are already sold out online. Everything she touches is instantly revitalized. Taylor, if this relationship doesn't work out, is there any way you can start dating one of our nation's crumbling bridges? Any infrastructure? Of course, it is not an official celebrity romance until they have a couple name, which is why I'm deeming the two of them Trailer Squelcy. Trailer Squelcy. Big Apple also got a visit from Donald Trump today. No, you're happy he was here. Because he's attending a civil trial that he has already lost. You see, last Tuesday? Okay. Last Tuesday, the judge in this case took the rare step of issuing a summary judgment, ruling that when it came time for him to apply for loans, Trump persistently committed fraud by inflating the value of his assets and said that Trump was living in a fantasy world, not the real world. Yes, a fantasy world where he won the election Windmills kill whales, and this is 215 pounds. Now, this ruling was handed down by Judge Arthur F. Engoron, who can only issue a decision after five smaller judges combine their powers to form Engoron! In his ruling, we liked the graphic. In this ruling, Engoron pointed out that the former president claimed his apartment in Trump Tower was 30,000 square feet rather than about 11,000 square feet, inflating the total square footage by 300%. Why does he always use a big lie when a small lie would work? It'd be like a 15-year-old saying, yes, bartender, I would like a cup of your strongest alcohol. What year was I born? 1935. Let's win in Korea. So that part's already decided, and the trial is just to find out how much he's going to have to pay for his crime. Attorney General James is seeking to have Trump fined as much as $250 million. That's a lot of money, especially considering that, according to Trump, $250 million could be valued as much as $3 billion. Now, in those brief moments, in those fleeting moments when he's not appearing in court, Trump is out on the campaign trail. On Sunday, he was in Iowa, where he talked about clean energy and batteries powering vehicles and gave us this hypothetical.
If I'm sitting down and that boat's going down and I'm on top of a battery, and the water starts flooding in, I'm getting concerned. But then I look 10 yards to my left and there's a shark over there. So I have a choice of electrocution or shark. You know what I'm going to take? Electrocution. I will take electrocution every single time. Do we agree? I will take electrocution.
So, in summary, would you rather me be your next president or have a butt where your mouth is and a mouth where your butt is and then have to eat a bug with your mouth butt? Trick question. I will take electrocution.
Coming up, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Now you can feel like you're in the audience at the Ed Sullivan Theater with official Late Show with Stephen Colbert merchandise at ParamountShop.com. Shop t-shirts, mugs, accessories, and more, and Late Show Poncho listeners can take 20% off with code TLS20. That's 20% off at checkout on all Late Show products with code TLS20 at ParamountShop.com.
How did everybody, were you able to make the most of the 5 months out there? Was everybody out there gigging?
Oh, yeah, I think so. People were all over the world. I mean, these guys were in Europe. We went to dinner once.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. There you go. Yeah. We don't have time for that when we're doing the show.
We really don't.
Well, it's fantastic. I think I've missed the audience, I've missed the staff, but I've missed the privilege of sharing the stage with you guys every night.
I made
some friends this summer. I already knew these guys, but I spent some quality time with these guys I like to call Strike Force 5.
Yeah. Podcast. Wow.
I want to thank my buddies Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel, John Oliver, and Seth Meyers, mm-hmm. who we formed a podcast to help try to pay the staff here. And, camaraderie, something approaching entertainment. I won't claim the show was good.
It was good.
But it was something to listen to while you chopped the potatoes on a Saturday. But I also want to thank Ryan Reynolds for all the money that he gave for his companies. And just an aside, Mike Chaffee, the editor who made our hour-and-a-half rambles into actual shows. Thank you all. Let's do it again someday, but not because we have to.
Yeah.
Ladies and gentlemen, my guest tonight is America's most beloved astrophysicist and host of Star Talk. Please welcome back to The Late Show, my friend and yours, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Nice to see you.
We're back, baby.
We are back, baby. You know, after 5 months, I think it's so fitting that you're my first guest back because you may or might not know this, but between these two shows, over the last 18 years, you are my most frequent guest and I think maybe my favorite guest.
Oh!
Because people often ask me, who's your favorite guest? And I say, Neil, do you have any idea why I say you? What is it about talking to you that I find so...
I have no idea.
You burn. You burn with an incandescent passion about whatever the subject is. I often feel vaguely singed on this side of my body after the interview's over. Okay, one of the big issues for the WGA and for the SAG on strike right now is the use of artificial intelligence in our industry. And, of course, I've spoken to people recently who said that it's going to change... it's going to change daily life to have artificial intelligence helpers, artificial advisors, help with productivity and that sort of thing. What are your thoughts on AI? Because I just can't buy the fear. I'm actually not that afraid of it.
Well, so as a scientist, we've been embedded in AI ever since we could possibly use it. We seek it out. We
want
it. Because it makes our job easier.
How does AI make your job as an astrophysicist?
Because I have data that I'm swimming in. I don't have the time or the energy to process it, to interpret it. So you train AI to reduce the data, analyze the data, and find the cool stuff. And I do that while I'm sitting on a couch eating a Twinkie. This is what you want. And plus, AI is all around us. It's, you know, when you talk to Siri on your iPhone, there's not a human being in that exchange. Siri tells you the fastest way to get to grandma's house through the traffic that just swelled up in the last few moments. That's a form of AI. So AI beat us at chess. AI beat us in Jeopardy, okay? No one freaked out and ran for the hills when that happened. It only made headlines when AI figured out how to write your term paper. Oh, then all the liberal arts folks, they pooped their pants, okay? Because...
Wait a second. I'm not going to sit here and let you go after liberal arts
folks. Yes, I'm gonna. Yes, I'm gonna.
What?
Because, okay, so yeah, it writes your term paper and people said, oh my gosh, AI is bad and dangerous, let's ban it. If you knew how embedded modern civilization already is in all variants of AI, you wouldn't possibly say that.
So what's the answer?
I mean, answer to what question?
The question of what are we going to do about the fact that a kid can just go have an AI write the term paper?
Oh, so
how are you gonna know whether
you
learned?
I love that. Okay, so maybe education involves an oral exam. Will you actually know whether someone has learned it?
Wow, you ask questions and stuff
yes,
like that.
Yes, you. Wow. Then you probe the mind of the human rather than whatever was summoned at the keyboard. That is a deeper form of knowledge and education anyway, and maybe we should have always been doing it, but we haven't. Yes, it's more labor. You probably need more teachers, and you might have to even pay them more.
Okay, you settled it. You fixed it.
I fixed it.
Okay,
real quick.
Yeah, sure,
on the AI, I just learned days ago that 15 of my books were used to inform the AI search engines for their content.
And how do you feel about your material being used as raw material for somebody else's business?
Yeah, as an educator, I want people... why do I write books? So you can learn what's in the book and do stuff with what you learned that's in the book.
Yeah.
So if now you can learn what's in the book faster by having AI grab it, I have to think about that. Okay? But it's 15 out of 183,000 books. There's a lot. It's not... But yes, that's one out of... If you do the math, it's one out of 1/12,000th of the AI engine's processing comes from my books. And so I was honored by that, but then a little creeped out by it.
A little creeped out. So you felt a little bit like a liberal arts major. You can understand where they're coming from. Got off your high horse
just
there.
A little bit, okay.
We have to take a break, but we'll be right back with more. Neil deGrasse Tyson, everybody.
Rise and shine, football fans. Start your day the right way with Morning Footy, a podcast that covers every aspect of the global game, headlines, match previews, analysis, interviews, culture, fashion, and plenty of banter. Join as we track the thrills and spills of Europe's biggest title races, the business end of the Champions League season, a summer packed with international competitions, MLS, NWSL, and much more. Subscribe to Morning Footy.
It is the author of the new book, To Infinity and Beyond. It's Neil deGrasse Tyson. Neil, listen, the people, they know. They know. I want to talk about a cosmic discovery that we've been dealing with this summer. There's a lot of talk about aliens, congressional hearings here and in Mexico. What are your reactions to the hearings? We had public congressional hearings about the possibility that we have an unexplained phenomenon happening on Earth that should be investigated by the government that some people are saying is evidence of aliens.
Yeah, so there's a lot, you know, the universe brims with mystery. Just because you can't explain something doesn't mean you can explain it. That's what.
One more time. I'm not an astrophysicist, so you might need to say that sentence again, exactly as you just said it.
If you see,
don't you dare rewrite it, Mr. AI.
Something in the sky that you cannot explain.
Yeah.
And you call it a UFO or the rebranded government version UAP. Unidentified aerial phenomena. Who are they fooling? They're talking about UFOs.
Right. I also am not thrilled that they're using a P there because it's UAP, unexplained aerial phenomenon.
You don't like where
I got. Well, I mean the P's got a yeah.
Okay. So UAPs. Oh, I see. Because you say P, but it's pronounced with a F sound. So there's a cognitive dissonance. Yeah.
You'll catch up with us liberal arts majors eventually.
Got it.
Words.
I got you.
Letters, sound, yes. Assonance, yes. Sonorism.
Yes, yes. So, where was I?
Getting schooled by a liberal arts major is what you were. You were talking about, so you were saying that, you know, just because something is unexplained doesn't mean it's unexplainable. Therefore, you can't just assign to it some sort of fanciful answer that kind of scratches an itch of mystery for you.
Once you say, I don't know what it is, you don't have the argument rights to then say, I do know what it is. It's visiting aliens from outer space. You just said, I don't know what I'm looking at. I can't explain it. It's doing things I don't understand. That's really the end of your sentence. And so at that point, you say, let's investigate it further.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
I don't mind investigating it further. Go right ahead.
There you
I
go.
Care about...
And they did, and here we are.
Oh, I love this. I there love these.
There,
there were two of them.
There
was two of them.
Sure, you always need a spare.
Yeah, yeah.
In case the dog gets to the first one.
And apparently one of them had eggs inside and stuff.
What?
Yeah, so I love, these are like, they're like 3 feet tall. They're like this big.
Sure.
This is in Mexico. And yeah. So what's interesting to me as a scientist is you have someone coming forth with aliens,
sure.
Mummified aliens. I'm saying that's better than what happened in our Congress where the guy has aliens in a locked box. Okay?
But he can't tell you where they are or who has them.
So that's not useful to scientists, okay? If you have a discovery, you want to share it. When we went to the moon and we brought back moon rocks, we shared that with the world. That's what science is. It's not what one person says about what they did in their lab. It's what other people say after they double-check you. And so,
okay.
They roll out the aliens. They roll out the aliens. They say, that's a start. Now, never mind.
How would that start?
Because they're not left in the locked box, okay?
Oh, I see.
So, I'm just saying.
Magic. No, how did you get it?
Here's what's interesting, okay?
Yeah.
These are very humanoid.
Yeah.
Most life on Earth with whom we have DNA in common does not look humanoid.
What?
We have DNA in common with a banana, with oak trees, with worms, with lobsters. For an alien from another planet to be this humanoid?
Like what?
It's got a head. I don't know which way your camera is.
There it is.
Okay, so it's got a head, shoulders, arms, legs, hips, ears, nose, eyes, mouth, legs, feet, fingers. That's humanoid, okay? Fine, but you're really gonna get a humanoid thing from another planet with another origin story than what we have here on Earth. That's odd. If you want to make a humanoid, put it back. Okay, if you want to make a humanoid, do you realize there is no bone under your nose? So all mummified humans, you see the cavity into your skull. This alien has a nose.
Yeah, because it's an alien nose, and maybe they have a bone, Neil. Okay, that's science.
Okay, so what you do now is you give it to the labs and let other people investigate it. That's a start. I love it.
Well, let's talk about
that. I love me some aliens. Don't get me wrong.
I would love it to be true. But what excites me, and I see how you feel about it, is that there is some data out there. Our military has said that these UAP, these aerial phenomenon that they can't explain.
UAFs.
What? Sure, whatever. Sure. That these UAPs, that they've got visual sightings that match the radar sightings, that match the infrared camera that locks onto them, and these things are doing things that they're saying, we do not have the material science or the propulsion to do any of this. How?
That's the U in unidentified.
Continue. I agree, but does it excite you?
Yes.
That no one can explain what's going on?
Always, and the research scientist lives on that frontier. We're looking out in the universe. I can't explain that. Bring in some more data. Get some more people. Someone smarter than me. We live in the world of the unexplained.
Could I use AI to do that while you're eating your Twinkie?
You could possibly. What you do is get AI to collate all of these observations and look for repeat patterns to see if there's something, if there's an actual atmospheric phenomenon, if there's some form of the image, some display of the lights that it could try to make sense out of.
Yeah
go right ahead.
Okay, I'm going to talk about the NASA's OSIRIS-REx spacecraft that delivered back to Earth just recently our first asteroid samples. How long ago did this mission go up? Do you know?
7 years ago.
And how long did it take the sample?
7 years. What?
No, when it went up 7 years ago, did it take the sample immediately?
Oh, right. Oh, sorry. I thought, how long did it take to bring the sample back?
I'm curious.
So it has to catch up with the asteroid. So while that's an important result, but let me just say something before that.
Sure.
OSIRIS-REx is a space probe launched from Earth, a moving platform, to intercept an asteroid called Bennu, a moving target. It reaches the target, does a touch-and-go, grabbing matter, putting it into a capsule, returning that to Earth, deploying the capsule on the rotating Earth such that it lands in a Utah desert of our choosing while the spaceship goes on to another asteroid.
Wow.
Yet, there are people who walk among us saying, I don't trust science. What did scientists know? How did science... And I'm thinking, do you know what we do? Do you have any idea what science is?
Okay.
Sorry.
Now, this sample.
Sorry.
Now, this sample. What happens to this sample?
I didn't mean to lose a gasket there. I'm sorry.
Please, this is the place to do it. That sample that comes back, does it get sterilized or anything? Because it could have the Andromeda strain on it.
Yeah, that was a story to remember, the Andromeda strain.
Exactly.
Yeah, so it was a bug that came from space and killed everybody. So do you want to be worried about this? Yes, so NASA has an entire branch of itself called the Department of Planetary Protection. And it sterilizes spaceships that we send forward so that if you're looking for life, it doesn't accidentally discover the rhinovirus because someone sneezed on it before it went. So you don't declare life that isn't really there, that you brought there, okay? And it is protocol for when samples come back from space. And so, yes, there's a whole protocol to reduce to basically zero the risk of contamination. Keep in mind, however, that Earth plows through typically 200 tons of meteors a day.
What? How come?
How come? the solar system is a shooting gallery, and there's a lot of debris. And most of these you'll see as just shooting stars. Oh, isn't that pretty? Earth is gathering mass, plowing through. And so it is accreting space dust every day.
So Earth is getting fatter.
Yes, it is.
Wow.
Yeah, I would say heavier, not fatter.
Sure.
This is.
They're telling me to rap, but I don't want to because I haven't done an interview in 5 months. And I'm enjoying this. I'm going to keep going for just here a second. Y'all figure out in the other room. Now, looking for life. You're saying, like, we want to send something sterile out there so we don't automatically sort of accidentally find ourselves, you might say, on that other planet. Where's your money? Europa, Enceladus? Like, where's your money on where there's going to be
life? I love me some Europa. Okay.
Talk to us. One of Jupiter's moons.
Yeah, one of Jupiter's moons. Jupiter sits outside of the Goldilocks zone, where if you're too close to the sun, your liquid water evaporates. Too far, it freezes. So Earth is in the Goldilocks zone. Liquid water thrives here. Okay. Outside the Goldilocks zone, it's natural for it to freeze, but Jupiter's gravitational stress pumps energy into the moon, plus the tuggings of other moons as well. Pumps energy in, so what would otherwise be a frozen ball is liquid underneath a layer of ice. It's been liquid for billions of years.
How much liquid are we talking?
More liquid than is in all the Earth's oceans. Yes. So I want to cut a hole and go ice fishing in Europa. Okay? I mean, why not? But here's...
Put up a little thing, a little space heater.
Just put it in.
Six-pack of Labatt's.
Exactly. And so, but here's an interesting question. If we find life on Europa, I think we're compelled to have to call them Europeans. So, I'm just saying.
We have to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more Neil deGrasse Tyson, everybody.
Jon Stewart is back in the host chair at The Daily Show, which means he's also back in our ears on The Daily Show Ears Edition podcast. The Daily Show podcast has everything you need to stay on top of today's news and pop culture. You get hilarious, satirical takes on entertainment, politics, sports, and more from Jon and the team of correspondents and contributors. The podcast also has content you can't get anywhere else, like extended interviews and a roundup of the weekly headlines. Listen to The Daily Show, Ears Edition, wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back with the host of Star Talk and the author of the new New York Times best-selling book, To Infinity and Beyond. I forgot this. Neil deGrasse Tyson.
So this is the third collaboration of my podcast, Star Talk, with National Geographic Books. And National Geographic, that's a beautiful book. Hold that up again. That's a beautiful book.
Gorgeous. That's a good-looking book. What? Are these...
Just saying.
Are those for sale in the lobby, Neil?
No, they are not.
They should be.
No.
Throughout the book, you evaluate Hollywood science. What film got it the most wrong?
Just briefly, this is the ascent from Earth to the edge of the universe with our physical selves and beyond that limit, our mental selves. So it's a quest. And by the way, not all quests ended okay. Like Icarus died trying to fly. So do you say, well, I'm never going to try to fly? Or do you say, maybe I should make my wings out of something different? Okay? The people who succeed typically know to not do what other people did that failed. This is a tracking of that, and right on up to the edge of space-time and wormholes and the like. And wherever the topic resembles contents of a film, you know I got to go there. You know, the scenery of film, did they get it right? Did they get it wrong?
You've made James Cameron's life hell more than once.
A little bit, yeah, because he got the wrong sky over the sinking Titanic.
What mystery have you cracked?
Okay, but we know that longitude, latitude, time, day, when the Titanic sank... And he had the wrong sky over Rose as she's looked with her dead boyfriend in the back of the thing. And I'm thinking, you know, if that had been Matt Damon from The Martian instead of Leonardo DiCaprio, Matt Damon would have built an outdoor board motor from the pieces of the ship and everybody would have been saved because he used science. So now, The Martian is an excellent film. Oh, we mentioned that the ship is rocking and they leave him for dead because if they don't take off, everybody dies. But on Mars, the air is 1% the density of Earth's air. So even fast-moving air would be like... be like a gentle breeze on Mars. Nothing would have been rocking. I told this to Andy Weir, the author.
Yeah.
And he said, no, you got to give me one. And he did so much else, right?
Yes.
That I gave him a hall pass on that. Okay?
Okay.
I gave him a hall pass. Now, so I would say the movie with the most errors ever, it's Armageddon. It has it violates more laws of physics per minute than any other movie ever until a year ago over COVID, I saw Moonfall.
Moonfall, that's the moon is hollow.
Halle Berry, the moon is hollow. There's a moon creature inside. And the astronauts knew about the moon creature, apparently. And the moon is getting closer to Earth and everybody's going to die. And I said, okay, this is the new highest violating movie I've ever seen of the laws of physics.
I understand you recently cracked the code on Barbie. What was the code on Barbie?
Oh, I Barbieheimered. Yeah, so if you see both movies in the same day,
yeah,
you Barbieheimered. So I did that, of course.
I understand, yes.
Yes, thank you. Good. Just no, I noticed that the moon was shown in the view in Barbie Land. And I said, okay, that orientation predetermines the latitude on Earth where this location could be. Okay? Then the sun rose and set over the water. That's another indication. A third indication is there are palm trees. So Barbie Land had to be somewhere between 20 and 40 degrees north latitude from the moon, below 30 degrees pretty much, because it had palm trees, and it had to have water to the east and the west. And if it's on the continental United States, it meant it was on the southern tip of Florida or any one of the Florida Keys. And I tweeted that, so I X'd it, and people lost their minds. I'm just putting a little science to Barbie.
It makes sense that much pink does say Keys.
I would later learn, yes.
Yes. Now, this is where we really go into overtime, and my producers are going to lose their minds. I got to talk to you about Oppenheimer.
Let's do it.
Okay, that, I was deeply moved by that movie.
That's why they call them movies.
Too hot. You're too hot, Neil.
Okay.
What did you think? My favorite moment. There's so many wonderful moments. Yeah. Science is pretty sexy in this movie. And they take it very seriously.
Science is a character unto itself.
Yes. Yes. And there is a moment when he is in, Heidelberg or someplace. He's in Europe studying the quanta. And he's having these sort of ecstatic moments where he's throwing champagne glasses into the corner of the room and having an experience, almost like glimpses, as they shatter. What did that moment mean to you? Because it's not explained, but at the same time, you're seeing sort of images of some vibrating circular strings and stuff like that. And you imagine that he's perceiving out in the world evidence of the internal conclusions he's coming to through the equations. And he sees an expression in the world.
Are you done?
What? I learned it from you, Dad. I learned it from you.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like that. What does that ecstatic moment mean to you?
The movie is rich in historical anecdote and detail. And every anecdote I know about that period, about Oppenheimer, about the war, about the bomb, about its power, all of that was captured in that film. And he did it smoothly without having to take an off-ramp just to do something that's scientifically correct. There's even a scene where there's a party, a physics party, and there's somebody playing the bongos. It doesn't zoom in and look at him, but you know, if you're in the know, Richard Feynman, one of the great physicists of the 20th century, played the bongos, so that was Feynman. Okay?
Yeah.
They didn't say that.
Yeah.
But actually, in the later credits, they credit someone named Feynman. But the word Feynman doesn't come out of anybody's mouth. That's the level of detail in this film.
I think at the Trinity explosion,
that was him, too.
He's got his bongos at the Trinity.
No,
he does.
Wait.
He's holding up his bongos.
Okay, no. You know who Feynman was at the Trinity explosion?
Who was
the guy in the car who they're saying, do you need this stuff to slather on your face? He says, no, I'm protected by the windshield. This is in one of Feynman's books, because he knew that pure glass is a excellent absorber of ultraviolet radiation. And he knew this. But then they threw in, okay, the windshield protects you from the UV. what protects you from the windshield? that was good. But that was also Feynman. Wow. That was something pulled from Feynman's record. And it doesn't identify him as Feynman. This is beautiful. Now, what's his face throwing champagne glass? I have no idea what he was doing. I thought my boy had lost it. It could have been some anecdote I didn't know.
I'll explain it to you later.
We'll get AI to figure it out. Yeah.
To Infinity and Beyond, A Journey to Cosmic Discovery is available now. The man is Neil deGrasse Tyson, everybody. Thank you for listening to The Late Show Pod Show with Stephen Colbert. Just one more thing. If you want to see more of me, come to The Late Show YouTube channel for more clips and exclusives.
The Hargan women seemed to have it all.
We were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But detectives would soon discover...
Inside the house, there were the bodies of two women.
A story of betrayal you would struggle to believe if it wasn't true.
I am just praying to God. This is a sick joke.
From 48 Hours, this is Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, The Hargan Family Killings, early and ad-free on Wondery Plus, starting May 1st.